It's Christmas, almost.
Yes, we're scant days away from Christmas.
Yes, we're on day whatever this turns out to be.
Day. Of the 12 dubs of Christmas.
Indeed. Now, Christmas time, since the space year 2005, has become associated with the annual disappointment that is the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Well, not disappointment.
Almost always disappointing. With one exception, which would be 2005's Christmas Invasion. But of course, the reason why we mention this is that people have pretty much got used to the fact that one of the things that always happens on Christmas Day on television
here
in the UK is you have the Queen's speech, which some people like to watch, but you'll also have the Doctor Who Christmas special. Now, what a lot of people don't realise or remember is that the first Doctor Who Christmas special was not in 2005. It wasn't, Andy.
I don't know why I'm asking. Having just experienced the
first one. Are you trying to keep some element of surprise and mystery going?
I am.
Wow, it's truly astonishing. In the space year 1965, Doctor Who had its first Christmas Day episode, and it was a special episode, no less. It was called The Feast of Stephen.
And at this time, just to preface it, it wasn't a one-off story, because Doctor Who in the 60s was very much, it was a series of serials, one after the other after the other. And at this point, Doctor Who was in the midst of the Daleks' Master Plan, a 12-part story, allegedly written by Terry Nation,
yes,
for which anybody with any knowledge of Doctor Who and or has seen any of the extras on any DVDs will know full well that he pretty much turned in the back of a fag packet job.
Indeed, in fact, if you can hear some snoring, that's Canine Judgment being passed by Canine correspondent Susan.
Yes, the not-so-silent member.
Indeed. So in the middle of the run, episode 7 of the run, to be clear as well, was that, like Doctor Who since 2005, the stories weren't broadcast as, you know, the something or something part 1 or part 2. So this was just episode 7 of what we now call Daleks' Master Plan, but for the viewers of the day, it was just that week's episode of Doctor Who called Feast of Stephen. Now, to explain, up to this point, the Doctor and Stephen, who was his companion, and Sarah Kingdom, who was not his companion, but someone who was along for the journey, were having various adventures with the Daleks and the evil Mavic Chen. I am Mavic Chen, guardian of the solar system. That's Mavic Chen's voice.
That was awful.
That was amazing.
That was weapons grade awful.
That was the
Kevin Stoney be rolling in his grave right now in absolute disgust.
That was an amazing imitation of
this fucking horseshit
of Mavic Chen, played by Kevin Stoney, who was the villain, and he was, as he's just said, and what you might have mistaken for the clip from the actual show itself,
if you'd been dropped on your head,
revealed that he was the guardian of the solar system, but he did a deal with the despicable Daleks to gain even more control over the universe, the galaxy, space indeed. And so there was a MacGuffin, which was the Terranium Core, which had been mined by Mavic Chen's secret to give to the Daleks, so the Daleks could make the Time Destructor, which would give them unlimited power. But the mineral itself was incredibly rare and would take like 50 Earth years just to mine the tiniest amount of it.
And was only available in Earth territory.
Indeed. So this became the MacGuffin that was chased about. So the Doctor got a hold of it, and then the Daleks would spend their time chasing him. So the adventure would take place across various times and places.
It feels very much, it's one of, I know Doctor Who is kind of like, was always in the serial format, but I'd say this is probably the one story that does feel like the King of the Rocket Men, or
yes,
your Batman movie serials or that.
It's also the one,
Peril of the Week, yes, Escape of the Week.
It's basically the first example of Doctor Who giving itself a new concept. Everyone goes on about when it became the Pertwee years and had a new concept of Doctors in the Earth and you can't escape. But basically, at this point in time as well, viewers didn't know how long a story would last for, because again, it didn't have numbers on it. So basically, the premise of the series changed for 3 months, which was that the Doctor would have various adventures and he would be chased by the Daleks, who were always after him to get this thing. So some weeks the episode would be quite directly tied into that storyline, sometimes more tangentially. But the Feast of Stephen, as I said, it was the one to be broadcast on Christmas Day when all the kids were hyperactive and all the adults were pished. So not much has changed in British society in the last 50 years.
No.
So for that reason, they didn't really follow on from the main storyline. So the storyline was basically parked for a while, so that the Doctor and the companion could have crazy Christmas hijinks. And the story was parked to some extent so much that when this was sold overseas, the Feast of Stephen episode was not copied and made available and was wiped very shortly after broadcast. So because it wasn't sold anywhere, even though, you know, some episodes still do turn up with the odd scrap of footage or whatever, it's the one that is almost certainly never going to be found again because it was pretty much shown and it wiped very shortly afterwards.
And having... So we've experienced it through the BBC Radio Collection version.
Yes, because thanks to the joy of...
Off-air recording.
Off-air recording. Every missing episode was not only recorded, but has since been cleaned up to a reasonable standard, and you can hear what's going on properly, but given narration and commercially released, so you can legitimately buy every missing episode. And for most of them, because of the way television was made at the time, they work surprisingly well as radio plays.
Yes.
So,
so this is the one which is narrated by Peter Purves.
Yes.
As
who was Stephen Taylor.
And as Ralph kind of says, kind of prefaced, he talks about the disappointment of Doctor Who specials.
Yes.
This is no different. This, I would have to say, having listened to it, it's the first time I listened to it in quite a while, actually. I kind of glossed over it, I think, when I was when I listened to the Daleks Master Plan. It's very forgettable. It's
very much an episode of two halves. Let's talk about them separately. The first half of the episode, because it's pretty much too many adventures that are crammed in to fill up the running time. Disappointingly, no Daleks are in this episode.
What is this Christmas you speak of?
More plum pudding. There's no Kevin Stoney as Mavic Chen in it at all.
Yeah, which is a shame because he is actually... The Daleks Master Plan is not a classic, by any stretch.
It's variable. There are episodes of it which I love.
And some which
episodes
flag.
Which flag. But it's worth your while anyway, and to be honest, you can get the download of it for about £6 now, so it's cheap. You can try it out without much effort, and you will get enough enjoyment out of it. This, unfortunately, is not one of the better ones, but let's look at the positive points, because I think the first half of the episode is actually okay. The second half, not so. The first half, basically, TARDIS lands in modern-day 1965, north of England,
outside
what is meant to be Zed Cars. But they had to file off the trademarks because they weren't allowed to do an official crossover with Zed Cars, even though that was a very popular BBC television show at the time. It's why there's a gag where the Doctor says to one of the policemen, "Oh, you look familiar." It's meant to be the Zed Cars character, but they can't say.
That's a shame. Can I imagine a young Brian Blessed as Fancy Smith?
So that's why the first half of the episode is all this crazy hijinks in a police station. With one of the actors from Zed Cars in it. So basically, it's very slight, and the TARDIS lands inside the police station. One by one, the Doctor, Stephen and Sarah, who is not a companion, who is just someone who goes along for the journey, come out and they have adventures, very lo-fi, low-key adventures with the police. Sort of mistaken identity, a bit of slapstick, a bit of run around.
Caper,
yeah. And actually, it's just long enough. Any longer, and...
It would have outstayed its welcome.
So, it's actually not too bad. There is some comedy. The Doctor has some good lines.
There's some nice bits about the fact that the pollution in the then modern day would be poisonous to both Stephen coming from the
20-something forward future. No, I can't remember, actually. It's from the future. Space time.
So I came down from even further, I believe.
From the time that the Daleks Master Plan is set in, no less.
Yes.
So, yeah, and then you have the bit where the Doctor is asked by the police officer, are you English? No. Are you Scottish? No. Are you Welsh? No.
You'll have to do a little bit further than that.
Yeah, I'm just a citizen of the universe and a gentleman to boot, which has become a famous sort of quote that's used a lot in articles about Doctor Who. So that stuff's fine. The problems begin when they decide, oh, it's time to get out of here. They go back in the TARDIS, and as per the format of the series at the time...
They just jump to a random
time and place. Now... To preface this, before we discuss it, whereas most Doctor Who episodes exist only in audio format now, are quite easy to understand because of the sort of stage radio type way in which they were constructed, and with the narration. You can follow them fine. Like the first half of the series, you can follow it fine. The second half, I suspect, was very, very visual and includes a lot of characters talking over each other and shouting. So it becomes a bit hard to tell what's going on, even with narration. Also, they land on a film set in the early days of the Hollywood film system. And you can tell by the twinkly-twonkly music and some of the narration that's put over it by Peter Purvis that it was meant to be partly done in the style of films of the time. So you are probably missing a lot of the gags and the jokes by having it in this format, and also the fact that we're not drunk in 1965.
Yes.
Because it's done very much in the sort of comedy style of the time. However, even taking these caveats into consideration, I suspect it was probably a bit crap at the time.
Yes. I think the most wincing-inducing point isn't the actual original footage, it's Peter Purvis doing narration in character as if he was narrating it back in the day, which I can see the point, because the tonal shift of him going from the events that we're getting to hear to rather dry narration would be quite jarring, to say the least.
Yes.
But the fact is, if you're not enjoying this, that doesn't help it any further.
Yeah, if you, it's done in the style of what's on, so it actually works, but whether you enjoy his slightly camper delivery will depend on whether you're enjoying the Hollywood hijinks. There's one good gag about it that one of the sort of people in the film set says, "Oh, I can do this trick and I can do that trick," and he's like, "Ah, it's been done by Chapman already. It's been done by Chapman already." And Chapman's apparently walking about at some point. That's clever. That's funny. Otherwise, it's quite tedious.
Yes, and then you get to the moment of charm at the end.
There is a moment of charm, with the famous bit where they get back in the TARDIS. The Doctor remembers he's on a Christmas special. It's Christmas Day, because when they were at the police station at the start of the episode, that was actually on Christmas Day. So they get a wee drinky and he toasts the viewers at home.
Yes, breaks the fourth wall just to...
Which is a nice moment. And
quite unexpected given television of the day, because when they were doing drama, it was drama.
Yes, but I don't actually think it sticks out as much as people often say it does, because in the context of the episode, as I said, we've just had the very aware Hollywood film studio bit with the music, where the sort of the visual and audio and language of Doctor Who
was changed. And you'd had the nudge, wink, wink, we're on the set of Zed Cars.
Yeah, you'd even had the bit where the Doctor recognises someone and says, "Oh, I know you from Jaffa," which was a previous story, but obviously he's recognising the actor, not the character. So, in context, to him toasting the audience at the end isn't actually that jarring, despite what idiot reviewers might say.
Yes.
We are idiot reviewers as well, of course. Yeah. So, yes.
But it's a case of eminently forgettable, I think, is...
Yeah, it is generally the one that if you get a copy of Dalek's Master Plan on CD or download, it is the episode that you probably listen to once, and then whenever you want to hear the story, you probably just skip it. But if you want to see the surviving visuals from the Dalek's Master Plan, the two episodes, one of which was found after this audio soundtrack was released, and a few wee scraps of footage, I recommend the Lost in Time DVD set. Because the three episodes that do exist, I think, are quite fun, and the scraps of footage present something a bit more dramatic than what you might think from the audio soundtrack.
Especially given that it's directed by Douglas Camfield, who
indeed,
arguably, out of the early Doctor Who directors, is head and shoulders above everybody.
In terms of actually directing it to quite a filmic style, rather than the television of the time.
Yes, which was kind of... filmed radio in
yes indeed, so
or filmed stage play.
But I said Doctor Who Christmas specials started again 2005. Quite enjoyed the first one, Christmas Invasion.
Yeah, it was good.
Then some other ones were made.
So next one was the
Runaway Bride.
I enjoy it now, having had the exposure to the Donna Noble character arc that followed her regular appearances, but taken in isolation, she is so annoying.
Yep.
Some nice touches though, the big spider aliens.
Then you've got Voyage of the Damned, which
could have been so much better.
Yeah, it could have been great, but it's a bit po faced, it's a bit up its own bum.
Yeah.
And Kylie is wasted in it. She's wasted. I love Kylie. After that you have the next Doctor.
which I quite liked, and I like the idea of a giant clockwork transformer Cyberman tooling about London.
It was one of those episodes where I thought, this is designed to be watched when you're drunk, and I wasn't drunk, so I thought it was poor. Except Doctor Who, you know, nerd fan, I do like the bit where the Doctor sees, activates the Dalek visual thing, and it's got all the previous Doctors, including Paul McGann. He counts!
Yes, we are fans of the McGann. For me, it was the books based on him that brought me back to Doctor Who as an active fan after many years out. So I recommend tracking down if you can, because it's not available commercially. Is if you were previously a fan of Doctor Who, or want to experience some of the potential of what a licensed property can do, given a little bit of creative freedom, track down the Alien Bodies, Interference books 1 and 2, Taking of Planet 5, and The Adventuress of Henrietta Street. 4 of these are by Mad Larry, Lawrence Miles, and the other one was by,
what's,
can't remember his name.
I feel really bad. I can see the cover on my head.
It is upstairs, but I'm too lazy to go. But Taking a Planet 5, is it Clapham?
I think it was Clapham,
yeah.
Should it was Mark Clapham.
If it's not, it's
Google is your friend.
Yes. These are all great high concept books involving a time travel show.
So after the next Doctor you got, was it? Oh, yes, the End of Time, Part 1.
The Man Who Cries, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
That, I'd say that's actually probably the worst.
It is, because it's the one where the Doctor cries that he's going to die, even though it's
he knows
been
he's
set up
regenerate.
Steadily that he just regenerates and he's gone. But, then the one after, which was okay, was Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
It had some things that let it down. It had Karen Gillan in her police outfit. But not in it very much. So it was a bit of a cock tease.
Did have the lovely Catherine Jenkins, though.
I did have the very lovely Catherine Jenkins. A wonderful singer. And a very lovely lady to look at. I had its moments, but again, if it had been a regular length episode, I think it would have been fine. But it just wasn't enough. But it was watchable. Not one of the worst ones. Then you had The Doctor, The Widow, and The Wardrobe, which was a pile of whack.
I didn't mind that, but it is forgettable.
You have Sir Clive Sinclair, sorry, the actor who was Sir Clive Sinclair, and the great BBC4 drama Micromen about
Alexander Armstrong, half of Armstrong and Miller.
He's also he was the voice of the computer,
Mr. Smith,
the Sarah Jane Adventures. Great actor, brilliant camp possibilities, and you stick him in a boring role and give him nothing to do. The story never starts. It's not funny. It's forced sentimentality. Very mawkish, very poor. However, we don't want the end of the door, no. Because you're actually thinking, hang on a minute, they're meant to be Doctor Who fans, and all they've done is Bone and Mitch. Bone and Mitch? Bone and Mitch! There you go. That's what the Feast of Stephen did to me. But no, it's just because it's not always a winner on Christmas Day.
But
every year we hope, and this year we hope even more.
Because what we have is...
this year's special called The Snowmen.
It looks like it's set in sort of Charles Dickens style Christmas setting,
which is
fantastic.
A potential for a winner. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
What we have is, they'll go in order, we have Lesbian Silurian with a maid servant.
That's a winner the last time they did it.
Camps Huntar and Butler.
Which is a winner, and also my love of the Santanans knows no bounds.
And even in the little teaser trailer that they showed where he hates the moon and thinks they should take out. Brilliant.
Yeah.
He's quite unbalanced.
It's true, we approve.
We have Richard E. Grant, and it looks like it's the Richard E. Grant from Hudson Hawk, because he's playing the bad guy, so it looks like we're getting the camp scenery chewer who's enjoying his work.
I have never actually seen Hudson Hawk. I'm only familiar with the computer game.
It's a classic film.
Yes.
It's not to everyone's taste.
I'm sure it is.
But it's Bruce Willis in the start of his, I've got loads of money, I'm just going to do stuff I really like.
So maybe then you've got The Snowman,
voiced by Sir Ian McKellen,
which is in the trailer, so...
you have a new TARDIS design,
which I can't wait to see, and from the little glimpses they've shown of us, looks like it harkens back to, well, the original TARDIS, at least in colour, if maybe not in style.
And we of course come to the highlight.
It's true.
Of it is we have the new companion, Jenna Louise Coleman.
Who's lovely.
Very lovely.
Who's lovely. Who was the previous one? Karen...
yeah.
I don't know. And Andy's just shown me that if you do Google image searches on her, she's in some fantastic pictures. I can also act as well.
Yes.
Yes, she can act as well. Which is a bonus, I feel. Yes. So, hopefully on Christmas Day, the snowman will deliver more than the Feast of Stephen did.
Yes. So, we will take our leave of you, and just to, this is the 10th of the 12 dumps of Christmas, so we have but two more.
What will be the special one for Christmas Day? What especially festive thing have we held back on to keep for the most festive episode of all, Andy?
We can't say.
We can't even hint at it, can we?
We can't. Although, the number 12 might give you a hint if you have any idea of how our brains work.
Indeed.
So, on that hint, cryptic teaser, bombshell, we'll take our leave of you and we'll be back tomorrow with what will be the 11th double
Christmas.
I think
your dog's farted. You smell that? Oh, Jesus Christ.
The sound.
It's drifting over here.
I think we'll now have to upgrade Susie to the silent but deadly member.
There's no excuse for that dog. Right, goodbye.
Farewell.